What's new, listeners? I'm Arthur Howell, the host of Two Cents Critic. If you want to mood for reviews of books, movies, and TV shows, then join in. Today, though, we're not doing a regular old review. No, no. Instead, we're going to have a nice conversation with filmmaker Joshua R. Penguin, who's behind Sidekick Productions, an award-winning production company that concentrates on queer, fat-positive, and sex-positive storytelling. The studio, Joshua, has put out web series like Skeleton Crew and Demon Doctor, and also has a couple horror comedies coming up soon. There's Brooklyn Butcher and A Taste of Youth, both of which are in post-production. Say hello, Joshua.
Hello, I'm so excited to be here today. Thank you so much for having me.
Yay, it's always nice to, you know, just talk with filmmakers. And for our listeners, do you want to just give a little intro in your own words about Sidekick Productions and what it's about?
Sure. Absolutely. I started Sidekick Productions it's 2024, so almost 15 years ago. Time just flies by. I started Sidekick Productions in about 2010, and I wanted, because I wanted to tell stories which were centered on people that I didn't see centered in a lot of mainstream media, and specifically queer and fat characters, and use queer and fat actors. At the time, I was still working mostly in the theater. So exclusively in the theater, actually. So we were a theater company at the time. And if anyone has been to New York and tried to do theater, you understand that if you don't have a lot of money, you'll never be seen. So because everyone does theater in New York. You can throw a rock and you're going to hit somebody who's doing a play somewhere. So it's a challenging experience to do theater in New York City. And it's wonderful, but it's challenging. And eventually around 2015, I decided to move into film and television. I'd never made any film or television before, but I felt like it was a chance for us to reach a new area that I hadn't explored yet and challenge myself as an artist, and also to find ways to, again, further the mission of Sidekick Productions, which was telling queer, fat positive, sex positive stories in a new area that would hopefully have a wider audience. And since then, Sidekick Productions has really grown and blossomed in so many ways. I mean, we're seen in countries around the world. We have won awards around the world for our work, and we really we get a lot of contact from people in all over this country and all over the world, talking about how much they are so grateful and so appreciative of seeing queer people who look like them on screen, and how excited they are to be able to have someone who represents their life, telling stories that reflect their lives, even if they're a little crazy sometimes, the stories, and the weird and wacky and wonderful, but they're definitely out there with the stuff we do. But it's just such a rewarding experience to be able to reach an audience that didn't have a voice and help give a voice to that audience. So
yeah, absolutely, because stories with queer characters, with queer fat characters, also including sex positivity, is not something that you see a lot of, unfortunately, in the mainstream markets, and it's definitely something we need more of. I think something that I certainly think about is when it comes to, say, having a fat superhero on screen. Like, that'd be something that I feel like we should have that, but we don't. Whenever I think about that, I always think about how, like, I feel like Star-Lord from the MCU could have gone down that road, but then, oh no, they just make him all buff. Even though it's like, you could have the other heroes, like, fine, like, if you want to be like, oh, like, Thor has me muscly, or Captain America has me muscly, fine, I'll flow with that, but with Star-Lord, with Peter Quill, it's kind of like it could have been more, come on, just be realistic here. Come on, have him be chubby.
He didn't have to be, exactly. I actually think I read that they tried to go in that direction too, but Marvel wasn't going to have that, so, yeah. which is unfortunate, but...
Especially for, like, his fat. I feel like his fat would have been perfect, especially on, he was on Parks and Rec, and he was chubby on there, so just let him be chubby in the MCU, but then no, you just kind of have him be buff, or also, like, Paul Rudd. Like, Paul Rudd also, like, he's all muscly, and it's like, but as Ant-Man, though, I don't think he has to be as Ant-Man, though.
They don't have to, and it's interesting and frustrating to see. But if you think back to Batman and Robin, when Alicia Silverstone played Batgirl, she was incredibly criticized for being quote unquote fat.
Oh, really?
In her suit. But Alicia Silverstone was a perfectly normal size. There is no normal size. Yeah. But Alicia Silverstone was a perfectly typical or average size. And but she got so much criticism for being quote unquote fat, and it was just ridiculous that people feel that superheroes have to be put into a specific mold. So it makes sense for some of them. If a character calls for a specific body type, then sure, you should do that. But also, not most characters don't really call for a specific body type. Yeah. So
that story also makes me think of Love Actually. Mm-hmm. And there's a character, she was like, oh, like all the fatphobic jokes about her. And it's relatively compared to other people, she is like sinner compared to other people. And it's just like, no, doesn't even make sense here.
Or Renee Zellweger in Bridget Jones's Diary too. I mean, it's all these jokes about how fat she is, but she's just sort of an average size. It's like, what are you talking about? I don't understand.
Yeah, improvements need to be made.
Exactly. And that's what we try to do. That's what I try to do. And that's what the people who work with me are excited to support. And that's what people want. I mean, people want to see these kinds of characters and these kinds of stories on screen. Yeah. It means a lot to them to see that. Yeah. So,
well, let's focus more on you now, starting with when you were little. So let's talk about where you grew up and what was life like for you as a child or your family. Let's start there.
Sure. I grew up in a very small town. It was about 500 people, so it was very, very, very tiny. It was about an hour south of Montreal, Canada. I'm right on the Canadian border from where I was born, on the U.S. side, but it's a very, very small, very cold, very mountainous town, and it was a very isolating place. There weren't a lot of people. There weren't a lot of experiences to get to do the fun things that. Like, if I had grown up in New York City, I would have been in Broadways and museums. Yeah. And do all sorts of insane, crazy things, having so much fun. And then, but I didn't have those opportunities. So I lived a lot in my brain when I was a child. I had a lot of friends that I made up and I wrote down. That's about the extent of my friendship for the most part. So,
understandable.
But it was great. I had a very calm overall childhood. It wasn't too challenging in a lot of ways. I mean, I grew up, I knew I was queer at a very young age, so that was difficult and a little bit different. And I'm a child that was born in the 80s, so I grew up in the 90s, so it was still a little weird to come out. I think people who are able to come out now when they're the age I was when I knew are a little bit more fortunate because they have that opportunity, even in small towns, to be open and out because everyone understands and mostly accepts. I shouldn't say everyone accepts. A lot of people, a lot more people accept.
Compared to
before. But when I was a kid, the only people that were that were gay in television were Ellen DeGeneres and Will and Grace. So it was not really. There wasn't a lot of exposure and a lot of opportunities to tell that. So I knew when I was a little kid that I was going to leave my small town and move to New York City as soon as I turned 18. And I did. I graduated and I went to college in the New York City area. And that was that. But in school, I was a very typical drama nerd. I was in all the plays and the musicals and everything. And I had a lot of, that was my biggest passion. And that's the things, that's what I focused a lot on from most of my high school years and everything. So.
Yes. And being in theater, now I must say, I've never been in theater myself, but I see other people going into theater. And I hear lots of stories, and it does look fun. Like I can understand how it would be such a fun environment, and obviously also has its own challenges. But still, you know, lots of fun to be had. And I'm wondering if through your time in theater, are there any particular like funny or even strange stories, just interesting tales you have you want to pluck out of your brain?
Let's see. I had a lot of really amazing. I mean, theater kids are really. Real theater kids, the ones who this is their life and that this is what they care about and this is all they care about. So kids like me, they are weird. They're very, very weird people. And they are all usually going to find you'll find that they're into weird things. They read weird books. They have weird friendships. They get excited by weird movies. It's very different. Like the high school football players will spend the weekend drinking. We spend the weekend watching Eddie Izzard comedy shows or Rocky Horror Picture Show or something like that.
Rocky Horror, yes.
So memories from theater that were special. I mean, I definitely learned the power of drag in theater because I played a couple roles in high school that had to be drag roles. And I realized how freeing it was to do drag performances. I'm not a drag queen at all, but I realized that there's a lot of power in becoming another person on stage and off. And that was really a wonderful experience there. My favorite musical that we did was A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, and I played a character who had to dress up like a woman, and it was a lot of, the audience really enjoyed that. I also realized that there is a lot of power in what I look like, but also it's because of how the audience expects someone who looks like me to behave. And so and what I mean by that is me in a dress is very funny because I'm a fat man in a dress. But if it were another man in a dress, it wouldn't necessarily be as funny. So I realized a lot to do with stereotypes and a lot to do with how a mainstream audience would expect someone to look and act and behave. And that's allowed me to sort of play with that in my adult life and everything.
Drag, yes. I have a few friends who watch a lot of Drag Race. And I always hear about that. I don't watch it, but, you know, again, I absorb it through, like, online social media, my friends. And what about you?
Oh, I watch Drag Race every night, every week. Not every night. It's not on every night. Give it time. RuPaul has a new show every week. So there will be, eventually, I think there will be a RuPaul's Drag Race every night of the week. But no, I watch it. I watch every season. I'm a huge fan. I love drag. I think that drag is a strong art form. I think that RuPaul's Drag Race has done a lot to advance the idea that queer people are real and everything to the mainstream audience.
To normalize them
in a way, yeah. Exactly. And I have a lot of thoughts about Drag Race in general, but both good and negative. But I am very grateful that it's there, and I'm glad it exists. And you're right. Even if you don't watch it, you know it exists because you can't not know it exists. If you go on Twitter, there's a meme, yeah. or there's a GIF, or there's something.
The memes. Even in a Discord server I'm in, this movie Discord server I'm in with some good friends of mine. So I see the memes and I see the opinions. There's a TV discussion channel where my friends are talking about Drag Race and I'm like, I'm seeing them root for some contestants. I'm seeing them make some criticisms about things they don't like. I'm seeing them sour face on things they do like. So it's just all annoying.
But Drag Race fans are very passionate fans.
Yeah. Yes.
Passionate. Sometimes too passionate. But we'll go with passionate. There's other words for them too, but we'll go with passionate.
And like, did you have any favorite looks, any favorite dresses, or just appearances that you lean towards during drag?
I don't do much of it. If you see Skeleton Crew, which you mentioned, I have a couple moments where I embrace drag a little bit in Skeleton Crew. I like really large campy costumes. Like I like something that's going to make a statement and make people laugh a little bit, but also make people think a little bit. Those are the kind of looks that I find are fun on the runway. So when I watch RuPaul, those are the looks that I really enjoy seeing come out. And then for myself, when I've tried things, probably my most favorite is I did a Phantom of the Opera style outfit that I thought was a lot of fun. That I kind of made most of it. So that was it was a nice challenge for myself as well. I'm not a very good seamstress or tailor, but I can do a little bit with a needle and a thread. So.
Oh, that's good. And to go back to the theater, are there any favorite celebrities you have? Any favorite theater celebrities? Anyone who just like really shines in the theater? Actors? Do you have any favorites?
When I, one of the most amazing and powerful productions I saw, I was lucky to see Philip Seymour Hoffman do Death of a Salesman, and that was a really beautiful production. And Andrew Garfield was also in that. So
it was the two of them
together, and it was just, it was a powerhouse. I mean, I love Death of a Salesman to begin with. And then just seeing the two of them together was so incredible. And this was like the year before Philip Seymour Hoffman died. So it was such an amazing play, and seeing the two of them together was so, I still think about it to this day sometimes. It was an amazing production. I mean, my favorite play is A Streetcar Named Desire. So I haven't seen a lot of productions of it, unfortunately, but the one that I did see that I really, really loved, Gillian Anderson was playing Blanche DuBois. So that was really lovely to see. I also love musical theater. I've seen so many great people do musical theater. I saw a wonderful production with Nathan Lane. I always love Nathan Lane. He did a production of Gary, a sequel to Titus Andronicus, which is an original play that pretends to be a sequel to the Shakespeare play Titus Andronicus. And it's a 2-hour play, and he's on the stage the entire time. It's basically just him and one other person. And it's just so intense to see the two of them. And then I just saw, it's closing this week, I think, or next week, but I just saw Joshua Gad and Andrew Reynolds do Gutenberg the musical, which, again, is a 2-person musical, and they are brilliant in it. It's so amazing to watch the two of them. Everyone's so good. I really can't say I've ever seen a terrible performer. Because they all are, everyone who seems to get cast in these shows, they take it seriously, and they love what they're doing. So
yeah, that's great to hear. Yeah, I'm thinking back on Andrew Garfield, because I feel like so much energy coming from him, especially. I have lots of love for him, in particular.
I love Andrew Garfield.
Tick Boom. I feel like that's a
Oh my god,
great example.
I love Tick Tick Boom. Tick Tick Boom might be my favorite movie musical ever. It's just so beautifully done. It's so, so beautifully done. And Andrew Garfield is so amazing in it.
Yeah, I feel like that's... I don't have an official ranking for my top movies of 2021 made up. Because I have Letterboxd, so I have some movie lists. I don't have one made up for 2021. But if I were to make a movie list for the top movies of that year, I feel like Tick, Tick, Boom would definitely be high up there. Definitely maybe like top 20, maybe top 15, maybe higher. I don't know. I have to make a list. But
I would say it's in my top 10 for 2021 for sure. So it was just such an amazing, amazing job by them. And I just love Andrew Garfield so much.
Yes, I mean, the energy, he just flows it everywhere. It just radiates it.
He really does. And when I saw him do Death of a Salesman with Philip Seymour Hoffman, he sounded just like he was from the Bronx or from Brooklyn. He didn't sound at all like he was from the UK. His he was so believable as this like Brooklyn teen young man who grew up in Brooklyn, and his accent was impeccable. It was just everything about him. He always throws himself into a role, and it's so much fun to watch him.
Yes. All right. So now I'd like to know, what was the first anything you shot, like a movie or a short film, even when you were little? Like, what was it? Could be anything, maybe a school project, maybe just anything cinema-esque.
Oh, the very first thing I shot. Okay. Well, that's very, very long ago then. It was a project for a class, and we did a short film about Greek mythology. And it was I don't remember it very well, but I remember that I know that I wrote it and that we filmed it together with a couple other of my classmates. And it was, I know that Poseidon was the villain, but I don't remember much more than that because I was very young at the time. So, but that was the first thing that I filmed ever. And then I made a short film a couple years later for another project for a class about drug addiction and suicide. Because I love these happy topics, but it was a controversial issues class, and I had to make a film. I didn't have to make a film, but I made a film about that. So,
and was this in college?
This was in high school. It was in middle school. I'm sorry, it was in middle school.
Okay, very good, very good. And Poseidon. Yeah, I feel like that feels fitting. Well, not even just Poseidon. Like, you could take a lot of gods and Greek mythology, Roman mythology, Norse mythology. You could take a lot of the gods, the figures, and turn them into villains.
Absolutely. And but of course now because of Percy Jackson, Poseidon is everybody's favorite god, so they all love him now.
Yes, Percy Jackson definitely has had a major impact on that. And just now I'm wondering, I don't know if you're particularly up to date on like the mythologies, but do you have any favorite gods?
When I was really into Greek mythology as a child. I loved Greek mythology. My favorite god was probably Hermes. I loved Hermes. Or in Roman mythology, Mercury. But I just loved the concept of a god of travelers and thieves, and he just seemed like he was fun and quirky and interesting. But I'm not sure why he was my favorite. Now I think as an adult he wouldn't be my favorite, but he was my favorite then. So.
Okay, interesting. Because you know what, I was actually going through the gods in my head, and I can't remember them all, but Hermes was popping up in my mind, and I was like, wait, I feel like Hermes. I might have some favor toward Hermes, which is funny. I feel like Hermes or Loki from Norse mythology, heavily influenced.
Loki's great.
Heavily influenced, I must say, by you know, the MCU and just watching Loki evolve.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
Tom Hiddleston's performance.
And it's funny you bring this up because with Hermes is played by Lin-Manuel Miranda, who directed Tick, Tick, Boom. So,
yes.
So look at we've got this circle going on with like connections and everything unintentionally.
Yes, yes,
so.
It's connecting everywhere. And Lin-Manuel Miranda. While we're bringing him up, I also have lots of love for his work specifically. I mean, Hamilton was the thing that really introduced me to him.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. In the Heights as well. In the Heights is such a beautiful piece.
I saw that movie very recently, and I had a great time with it. Lots of fun with that movie, and of course Moana. Can't forget Moana. The songs of Moana.
There's some beautiful songs in Moana. Moana's not my favorite Disney film, but I really enjoy the music especially, and I really love the representation that it has. Yes. So.
Do you have any favorite songs from Lin-Manuel Miranda's collection?
Probably the Moana song, Come to the Water, I think, is the name of it. It's the one that Moana sings before she goes on the water. But I think that might be my favorite Lin-Manuel Miranda song. It's just really a really nice song.
Is it How Far I'll Go?
Yes, that's it. Yes, How Far I'll Go. Yes.
Okay, that's a good one. There are a lot of great songs, but yes, that is fantastic. That is fantastic. And when you were making the short films in middle school, was there any particular challenges you remember finding when you were making these short films? And were those challenges kind of like, would they stay with you? Would you have to face them later on when you were making more of these productions?
The challenges that time were, one, none of my classmates wanted to do this, but I convinced them that this is what we had to do for our project. Because I was the person that usually led the projects because I was the one that was the overachiever. So nobody wanted to do it, but they ended up agreeing to do it. So that was one challenge. Another challenge is I had no idea what we were doing for editing because there was no way to edit. Because it's not like now where you got Adobe Premiere and you can just stick everything in there and edit it. When you were recording on a camcorder and you have this VHS tape, I have no, you can't do anything with that.
Using VHS tape, oh no.
That's how you had to record back then, because there wasn't anything else to do.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any of those cool machines where you splice these things together or anything. So those were all challenges that I had as a child. And they did not carry through because luckily I only work with people who want to be there with me now. And I film digitally, so I don't have to worry about anything with VHS at all.
Yes, the technology has advanced, thankfully.
Thankfully, indeed.
Yeah, just so because it makes me think about how because I have filmmaking aspirations in the future, and I would like to, like, I want to make a short film sometime. Even earlier today in our Discord server, I was chatting with some friends, and other people want to make short films. I actually have one friend who's already made a few short films, and I actually starred as a voice in the most recent short film. It gives some fire, some creative juice. So, like, do you have any particular advice for, like, people who are trying to make their own short films?
My advice for that would be don't overthink it. Just do it. Because a lot of people get so stuck and afraid of looking silly or doing something wrong or it not being perfect. It's very unlikely your first short film will be perfect. Yeah. So that's okay. it's a learning experience, and you will have a great time doing it. And if you always sit there and think about it, you'll never do it. So there are too many people who just sit there and worry and question about following their dreams. They just need to do it. And I know that's easier said than done, but at the end of the day, almost everyone has a cell phone, and that cell phone is a camera. So if you don't have to have a fancy camera, you don't have to have fancy audio or lights and everything. You just have to have people who want to help you and your cell phone, and you can make something with that. Will it be perfect? Probably not, but that's a start, and that's where you can learn from.
It's a start, because I've had a friend of mine, one of my friends, has actually made a few short films and has achieved that by using an iPhone.
Yeah.
And it looks good, too. Like, it looks good. I like the visuals. I'm into the visuals, colors of the short films that she's been doing. And she's able to use those limited indie means to achieve this. And it is inspiring to watch.
It is. And you, if you want to tell a story, believe in the story that you have, because no one else, and don't worry that somebody else told a similar story. This is your voice. I don't necessarily believe this, but in grad school, one of my teachers said that there's only two stories in the world, Cinderella and Jack and the Beanstalk, and every other story is a variation on those two stories. I don't agree with that completely, but honestly, I mean, every story has similarities to another story. It's just how it works. It's storytelling. Right,
so how do you take these core narratives and put your own twist on the basic element?
Exactly. How do you make a love story unique? It's your voice. So you tell the story your voice tells.
The tropes.
So.
How do you mess with the tropes? See how do you transform it into different genres like science fiction, horror, comedy, drama,
exactly,
musical.
Or all of it together.
That's all of it together. Do you have any particular mixtures of genres?
I am a huge fan of horror comedy. That's probably my favorite mixture of genre. So,
yeah, horror comedy. I do like horror comedies as well. And when they're able to mesh it together. And do you have any particular favorite horror comedy examples?
Oh, we don't have the whole time to talk about this. some of my favorite horror comedies. I classify Scream as a horror comedy in a lot of ways because I think it's really, really funny. It's also scary, but it's really, really funny, I think, too. So Scream is one. Shaun of the Dead is one of my favorite horror comedies. I love Shaun of the Dead so much. It's so good. Tucker and Dale versus Evil. That's a really good one.
I still need to see that.
Oh, if you haven't seen it, you have to watch it. It's really funny.
Good thing.
It's so good. Oh yeah. Those are some that spring to mind immediately, but there's a lot more out there. And of course now I'm also blanking on them all, I guess Child's Play and the Chucky series is horror comedy, especially. It's evolved into that. Because I love Chucky so much, and even Nightmare on Elm Street has a lot of humor to it, and it's a very funny series in a lot of ways. I mean, what I love about horror comedy is that it can be really, really, really dark, and then really, really, really funny at times too. Rocky Horror Picture Show is another horror comedy that I think is wonderful. Yeah. Reefer Madness is so good. I don't know if you've seen Reefer Madness. It's a musical horror comedy. Reefer Madness.
I don't think I've heard of this. Interesting. Okay.
So Reefer Madness is the original Reefer Madness is a 1930s short film made by the U.S. government to talk about how evil marijuana is. But in the 1990s, somebody adapted that into a musical for Off-Broadway, and then Showtime did a musical movie of that.
Oh.
And it's Kristen Bell is in it. Kristen Bell from Veronica Mars.
Kristen Bell.
And Frozen. Yep. Neve Campbell has a cameo in it. Neve Campbell's brother's in it as a star. Steven Weber, Anna Gasteyer. And of course, the big one, Alan Cumming. Isn't it?
I'm looking at the cast right now. I just saw. Oh my goodness!
It's so funny. It's so funny, but also a great horror film. So it's so good, and it's a musical. It's got such good songs in it.
A musical. Okay, very interesting. I'll have to keep this in mind. It's funny. See, now when I hear Yeah, okay, I'll have to keep this in mind. But when I hear this mixture, it makes me think of You're a Monster that's coming up. Because that's supposed to be like a horror rom-com with some musical elements in it, I think. It sounds like a very ambitious movie. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm pumped for You're a Monster.
I don't think I've heard of that.
Oh, with Melissa Ferrera.
Oh, yes, of course. No, oh, yes. And then, yes, I know what you're talking about then. Yes, okay. Yeah, I'm really excited for that. I'm really, really, that and Abigail. She's got two movies coming out that look really fun.
Abigail, really great, so. Yes. Oh, my goodness. That looks like a blast, too. That looks like a horror comedy as well.
I definitely think it's a horror comedy, so.
It's got some fun. It's got this little vampire child who's also a ballerina.
Yeah. And the Evil Dead franchise is also a horror comedy, really, because it's funny, yes. But it's also really, really, really dark at
times. I've seen the first two Evil Dead, and then I also saw the most recent Evil Dead, and then I still want to...
Evil Dead Rise, yeah.
Yes, and then I still want to see... I still have to see the third one, and then there's a reboot.
The remake from 2012 is good. It is not a horror comedy.
From what I've seen, I think it was like, oh, that looks like a straight up horror movie.
It's a straight up brutal horror film.
Brutal, yeah.
It's gory and brutal. I like it. It's not my favorite of the franchise, but it's not obviously connected to the stories and everything, but it's good. And then the TV series too. You've got Ash versus Evil Dead.
Yes. Evil Dead. I feel like Evil Dead is also a good example of indie filmmaking and showing.
Very good. You know, yeah. Sam Raimi did it.
He was able to just make this on the indie means, the indie vehicle, and it's great to see that.
He did a great job with really, really, well, he had more money than I do, but he still had not, he didn't have a lot of money at the time, so.
So now I want to ask you, let's shift the conversation over to queer, fat positive, sex positive representation, and I'm wondering, it's not something that is very mainstream, unfortunately, again, as we said before. So where did you, was there any media that you were still able to draw inspiration from them in order to create what you're doing now with Sidekick?
Well, I think that for me, the difference is I believe that people who are queer and fat can be main characters in any story. And it doesn't matter what the story is, they can be main characters. And I think that that's not something that you really saw a lot at the time. I mean, Nick Frost is a great example. Nick Frost from Shaun of the Dead. He played a lot of characters who were not typically characters you'd find someone playing that of his size and everything. Unfortunately, most of the time when you had a fat character, they were not meant to be a hero or meant to be a lead or meant to be centered in the story. They were there as a supporting character. They were there as a joke. They were there as a villain. They weren't really there as everything. And you certainly won't see a lot of them. If you have a fat character in a movie, usually there's one fat character in the movie. There's not all of them being fat or certainly, again, if they're queer, you won't see a queer fat character at all. I mean, it's very, very, very rare that you would see that. You can see that in Modern Family, I guess, with a queer fat man as a character, but it's such a extreme stereotype at times. So I guess to answer your question, I'm rambling a little bit because I don't really have a good answer, because there wasn't anything really out there that there were smaller shows and things like that. Like there was like Doug Langway made a trilogy called Bear City. That was a rom-com trilogy about queer fat characters. And many people point to that as a huge inspiration. But again, it's very independent. There's not a lot of people knew about it and everything. So there are people who did things, but not a lot of them. So I didn't have a lot of places to look. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, but. Like even on like on Modern Family, and I haven't seen it, but I've read about that. And I know that that character has been really stripped of sexuality. There really isn't much sexuality shown in that particular relationship, which is such a contrast with your productions, where it is just everywhere, and it is just handled so casually, so positively.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing I wanted to do also. I don't want to call attention to it. I just want it to be normal. I just want it to be, this is how people live. This is who people are. And we don't need to make anything weird about it or anything. In Skeleton Crew, we do a lot with sex positivity. And it's because honestly, for the average queer person, that's very normal to talk about that stuff in your everyday life, and to find out that your friend is interested in puppy play, or that your friend is exploring a new gender identity. It's these are all normal things, and for a mainstream person who doesn't know that, it might come off as weird or strange, but for me, it's just conversations I have every day with people. So
yeah, and it's something that should be much more widespread. And I'm thinking right now about how just a whole crowd of people who are saying, oh, sex scenes should only be present in movies and on screen as they drive the plot. And I'm just thinking, oh, their brains would explode if they were watching the nudity and sexuality and Job Shibboleth's work.
You're not wrong at all. I have very, very different opinions than those people do.
Normalize it. I feel like we've been using that term. Trying to normalize it. It's frustrating to watch, and it's frustrating. Even with Oppenheimer.
The people's reaction to Oppenheimer made no sense at all. It's so strange to see how prudish people have become in some ways, and I just don't understand it.
And that's not even involving any fat characters being depicted. So it'll be And it's like, oh, that'll amplify the strange people's fears and anxieties and strange feelings all the way up. Oh my.
Absolutely. No, you won't really see that at all in a mainstream movie. And that's something I'm hoping to change, but you don't see it at this point.
And so I'm wondering, do you have any favorite stories about like anything funny, anything peculiar that happened while working on set for any of your productions?
Oh my goodness. I have so many fun stories, actually. I mean, we are a very indie production company, which means that we are very much all wearing many, many hats and doing many things at the same time. Yeah. So I'm typically the writer, director, and actor, and often and producer. Sometimes I'm running the camera, sometimes I'm not. But I'm doing a lot of things. I guess, let's see, some weird stories or funny stories. We filmed A Taste of Youth in 11 days, so that was a lot to film in 11 days. But that was weird and funny at the same time.
11 days? That is, yeah, very short. Oh my.
That very short for a feature film. It was our first feature film, and I was like, we're going to film this in 11 days. We can do it. And I regret that a little bit, but because it was a very exhausting experience.
Yeah.
But I mean, when we did, well, in Skeleton Crew, we have a musical episode that was an hour and a half long, and making any of the songs was so much fun. Any of the musicals, but one of the songs in particular, we were in a bathtub, and it was a portable bathtub, and the bathtub was not really solidly put on the ground, so unfortunately. As I was getting out of the bathtub, I knocked the bathtub over and it fell on top of my phone and broke my phone.
Oh no!
So I guess that's a funny but sad story.
Oh no! Your phone, your poor phone. Oh no!
But it's okay. But I got a new phone out of it, so that was good, I guess.
Oh wow.
With Brooklyn, I mean, it's just honestly. Doing an independent film, everything, every day has to be a little bit of fun. I mean, every day is a work day, but you have so much fun doing it because the people that you're there with love being there, and the people that you are working with love being there, and everyone believes in the story that you're telling and that you want to make happen. So yeah. it's in a lot of ways, a lot of people you're working with are your friends. So you're making a movie with your friends, and that's just awesome. That's so much fun.
Yeah. Just to have that camaraderie. Just makes things a bit easier when you have those connections. Yes,
it really does. And you have better chemistry. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Now there's a scene in A Taste of Youth, and I'll stay away from like major spoilery stuff. But just like there's a scene that happens it unfolds as a confrontation of sorts, like an argument over someone's asexuality. And I'm wondering. Mm-hmm. You probably were drawing inspiration from that, maybe from anything that happened in real life, did you?
Asexuality was important to include in the movie because I don't think that there's a lot of asexual characters, and there's certainly not a lot of asexual main characters. And one of my goals with Sidekick Productions is to represent the queer community as much as possible. And we try to have trans representation, we try to have gay representation, we try to have pan representation, and we have a little bit of asexual representation in Skeleton Crew, but I wanted to bring it into one of our features as well. And it's a topic that's not a lot of people understand, and even in the queer community, not a lot of people understand asexuality. And I did a lot of research, and I read a lot about it to learn more. I watched a lot of podcasts to get a better understanding about it, and to make sure that we were doing the best we could to represent the asexual voice. And again, asexuality is a very large spectrum, so it's there's no one way to represent asexuality, but we wanted to start doing that, which again, not a lot of people do, and certainly not a lot of horror movies do. I don't think I've encountered an openly asexual character in horror, and this might be one of the first times that you see that, which is in A Taste of Youth.
So. Yeah, because I feel like aphobia, I feel like it's not really a popular phobia out there that people know about, a form of bigotry, but it does unfortunately happen, and of course there are ace people out there, quite a few ace people out there. And because when I'm thinking about queer romance books that I read, unfortunately, very, very few of them feature someone who is ace in one of the main roles, which is frustrating, whether it's like ace or aro, it's very frustrating.
Absolutely. No, it's not an area that people are comfortable voicing because I think it makes people feel weird to say that they are ace or that they're aro. And it's also an area that not a lot of people still know about or understand, really. It's not a topic that I think people, even queer people, are fully versed in. But there is, I can recommend you a book if you want to read a book about ace characters called Socially Awkward. And it's about two characters who, they don't explicitly say they're ace, but their relationship is very ace. So it's an ace romance, and it's quite lovely. But you're right. It's a topic that not a lot of people really use and share. And there's a lot of work that, like in A Taste of Youth, the character who is asexual is married and he does have sex with his husband. So it's not like this particular person, that the character does have sex. He just doesn't enjoy it because he's asexual. Yeah. So he doesn't experience sexual attraction. That's his experience. That's what an asexual person is.
Because they want to choose a spectrum.
Exactly.
Which, again, people should get more educated on that. And this book, so do you know the author? I'm trying to find, is it Socially Awkward?
Socially Awkward. O-R-C.
Awkward.
Yeah. It's the third book in a trilogy. And it's super queer. The trilogy is super queer. It's really simple fantasy. The first book is called Red Air. The second book is something about elves. I can't remember what it is. And then the third book is Socially Awkward.
Okay. And do you know the author's name?
I can look it up in one second. I can. Okay. Lisa Henry and Sarah Honey.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. Because I do want to add this to my TBR pile, definitely.
It's a super cute book.
Okay, I see.
I would recommend reading the first two books first, but they're all very short books, so it's very easy to read them very quickly.
Right.
So.
Now I have it right here. Always looking to add my TBR pile, definitely, and I would make my own recommendation. I would say The Charm Offensive by Addison Cochran. That also has good age rep in it. You know, it's like aside from that, I'm just like, oh, I wish I could find more books. But at least I have one. I have another one on my TBR pile.
It's good to keep looking for them and finding more. And I think more people will have them as asexuality becomes a more common topic for people. It's still relatively new in new quote unquote in some ways for a mainstream audience. But you're starting to see a couple characters here and there. But like Jughead from the Archie comics is an asexual character. But in Riverdale, he was not.
Well, do you want to tell the listeners about Brooklyn Butcher and A Taste of Youth about the movies coming up?
Absolutely, I'd love to. A Taste of Youth is based on a short film that I made during the pandemic, and it is essentially about a man named Mateo who is turning 46 and is miserable about getting older. So he will do whatever he can to not get older. And that leads him down a dark and dangerous path with a bunch of other people who are also doing whatever they can not to get older. Because gay or straight or queer or hetero, sexual or anything of the above, people are afraid of getting older. And yeah. That's something that unites us all. Yeah. So in A Taste of Youth, you see a large variety of people who are afraid of getting older and what that means for them. And also people who appreciate and embrace it too. A Taste of Youth is the first feature film that Sidekick Productions is putting out we've ever made, and we're very, very excited to have that released. It should be done by the end of February, actually. And we are hoping to be in our first festival this spring, but I have to wait until February 15th to find out if we get in or not. So no, I don't want to jinx myself by saying anything, but I'm hoping that we get in, knock on wood, for that. Oh. So technically we got into a festival already because our trailer was accepted to a festival last year. So the trailer for the movie was accepted somewhere. So, Brooklyn Butcher is an anthology horror. So if you are familiar with horror, listeners, you know that anthology horror is a very popular genre of horror where there's usually four or five or six or more short films in a larger wrapping of something. VHS.
I was going to say VHS, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go. Perfect. Great minds are thinking alike there. So A Brooklyn Butcher is about one Brooklyn apartment building, one night. So in a city besieged by fear because of a serial killer named the Brooklyn Butcher, one Brooklyn apartment building experiences their own, each apartment experiences their own experiences with horror. They learn what it means to be afraid. There are 9 stories in this movie, and each one is about an individual apartment in the building, and each one is taking place at the exact same time as the other 8. Some characters cross over between them, so that way you get a sense of what's going on, and you actually see a larger narrative going on as well because of that. But all in all, it is a really fun, it's a love letter to horror, because every story is a different homage to horror films. So
yeah, horror is quite varied like that. A lot of different, even subgenres within itself, and of course you have lots of love for horror comedy, and even with Brooklyn Butcher and with A Taste of Youth, they both are horror comedies. You know, there's some funny bits, but also they can get scary, they can get gory, grisly.
Yeah. Yep.
But are there any other subgenres of horror that you have love for?
I love body horror. I think that body horror is fabulous. Yes. So movies like The Fly or Society is so much fun.
Society, I haven't seen that.
It's a weird movie, and then it gets really weird. So
okay, I remember. I'm going to my memory bank, and yeah, Society. I faintly recall hearing about this movie now.
It's a nice 80s movie. It's 80s. A really nice 80s, 80s movie.
Yes, I remember. Yes.
And oh, American Werewolf in London. I forgot all about American Werewolf in London. I love American Werewolf in London so much. I also love. I love a good slasher. Everyone loves a good slasher. Give me a fun slasher character, and I love it. So Terrifier is a lot of fun for that. I really enjoy Terrifier because Art the Clown is a really fun character.
I haven't seen Terrifier. Really brutal. But I've always seen like it's the clown being like everyone on social media, like, you know, people, a lot of people love him. A few of my friends don't like Terrifier, but I understand the divisiveness there, and I'll watch Terrifier myself someday to see how I feel.
Terrifier is violent.
I know.
If you're watching it,
that's why I've kind of been holding it off, because I watch a lot of horror and like gory crap, but I know that Terrifier gets gory as hell. So I'm like, okay, I'll watch it someday, but not right now, but someday.
And I love a good religious horror. So I love like Rosemary's Baby, or I love The Exorcist, of course, the Omen movies. Those are all really fun movies. So I mean, honestly, there really isn't a genre of horror that I don't like except for found footage. I'm not a fan of found footage.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Found footage. I can understand why people don't like found footage. For me personally, I have love for the, at least for the ones I've seen so far, with Wreck and Creep being my favorites in found footage horror.
Creep is good. There are movies, Creep is very good. Yeah. I like Creep a lot. Creep is Creep is a good example. There are good movies in found footage. I just think that too many people find it to be too easy to make a movie that way. So, and really, it just gets, it's not my genre, but yeah. I don't connect with it a lot. Yeah. But Creep is good. I like Creep a lot. So much fun with it.
And do you have any, let's talk about just a few quick favorite books, movies, and TV shows just overall, not just horror stuff, but just overall books, movies, and TV shows.
Oh, my favorites. Well, my favorite TV show of all time is Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That's my favorite TV show of all time. But I also love The Golden Girls, so that is my other favorite TV show probably of all time. So I watch both of those frequently. I also love Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. That's a really beautiful show. It's four seasons of weird and wacky and wild musical behavior. Those are probably my top ones, I would say, right now that I'm thinking about. I mean, I love the DCU. I love The Flash. I love Arrow. I love all of those. I'm a huge nerd, so I love superhero shows and everything. So I love that stuff. But in terms of things that were powerful, those were some of the more powerful shows that shaped me a lot as a younger person. Movies, I have far too many movies that I absolutely love. I don't even know where to start with that. That's so hard.
I know how you feel.
That one's really hard. I might have to come back to that in a second. But my favorite books of all time are going to be the Lord of the Rings series. I read those a lot as a kid. Yeah. I love them a lot. And then I'm obviously a huge fan of Shakespeare because I have my doctorate in Shakespeare. So I love Shakespeare, and I love theater in general. So I love dramatic literature. I love reading dramatic literature. I love having that chance to do that. There's some other really, I mean, I really love when fantasy and horror and queerness get mixed together in things. So David Slayton has a really wonderful series of books called the Adam Binder Trilogy. It's White Trash Warlock and then the sequels after that. And it's a really wonderful series about queer fantasy horror characters kind of things. Movies, I'm still trying to think of movies where I can start with. I mean, I love and movies that are not horror that I've not already talked about. I love The Birdcage. That's a classic for me. I love Whiplash. That was a really good movie. I enjoyed that a lot. I think that, my goodness, I know there's so many movies I love, and it's hard to pick which one I'm going to talk about. So, but most of the movies I love, really, really love, are probably horror. Yeah. So,
yeah.
But like last year, my favorite movie of last year was Poor Things. I think that was the best movie of the year.
Oh,
so.
Okay. I still have to see that. I know I've been seeing some people love it, especially one of my friends, a friend of mine. She really absolutely loves it, and I'm excited for it. Yorgos Lanthimos, Emma Stone. I mean, come on. Gotta be a...
I love Yorgos. I love all of his movies that I've seen. I love The Favourite so much. I love Killing of a Sacred Deer. I love The Lobster. I just love what he does. It's so much fun.
Sacred Deer, I saw that for the first time a few months ago, and I ended up really vibing with it. I was like, this is such a bizarre little movie, but I'm clicking with it. And this is what Lanthimos' style is. Like, maybe I should check out his other movies.
100%. He is so fun. He's so good. I also love Ari Aster. I mean, I love Hereditary. I love Midsommar. I haven't seen Beau Is Afraid yet, mostly because I don't have 3.5 hours to sit down and watch it. I haven't seen it yet, but I can't wait to see it. I really look forward to it. So.
Yeah, definitely. Beau Is Afraid, that's an interesting movie. I personally didn't vibe with it. But you know what? I can see why other people do. You know what? I can see why it hits for other people. But yeah, those are some great picks. Oh, also, before I forget, Whiplash. I love Whiplash. Yeah. And I feel like Whiplash, I feel like when I'm recording my podcast, I feel like Whiplash has gotten some mentions on the show recently. Which is nice. Maybe someday I'll do a podcast on it. Yeah. A whole podcast on Whiplash.
You should. Whiplash is a good movie. It's a really lovely film. Well, lovely is the wrong word, maybe. But it's a really enticing and exciting film. And he's so good in it. J.K. Simmons is just so good.
Terrifying.
I just terrifying. Love terrifying. But I love watching him in it. He's so good, and he's so nuanced in it too. It's just
So not just like a one note villain here. No, Terrence Fletcher is complicated. He is a human.
Yep,
and an asshole, a complicated asshole.
And I had a teacher who was vaguely similar to him, so I understand where he's coming from in some ways. So,
oh dear,
not quite as abusive as he is, but with a similar mindset, I think about things. And honestly, I appreciate that he was all about the work. It's
the art.
It's about the art. The people are important too, but the art. It's about the art. That's why we're here. So.
Well, Joshua, we've been having such a wonderful talk here, and I want to thank you for coming on to the show today. I want to wrap things up by asking you for your good word. Now, this is part of the show where you get to recommend something, a book, a movie, a TV show, music, anything you want. So, Joshua, what is your good word?
Absolutely. I was really excited to think about something that I could share with listeners that maybe they might not be aware of. And so I racked my brain for a little bit because I was like, what can I share that probably your very savvy listeners haven't heard of? I recently got into the world of TTRPG or actual play, which is basically role-playing games, but recorded and presented as a podcast. So it's a world that I recently discovered about 2 years ago now at this point. And I was lucky enough last year to explore that world with a really wonderful company called Queen's Court Games. And they make some of the best RPG actual plays in the world. In fact, they were the best. Their show, The All Night Society, was the best actual play in all the world last year on the Audio Fiction World Cup. So I would recommend to your listeners, not The All Night Society, because that's really good, but something that I think is more along my lines because of the horror aspect of it, is a series that they did called Downfall. And Downfall is a 4-episode series that you can watch on YouTube. And it is about a young man who goes missing at NYU, and his sister, his girlfriend, his friend, and his professor are on the hunt to find out what happened to him. And it only gets more horrifying as you go along.
Ooh, nice, nice. Yeah. My guests haven't really typically given recommendations in that field specifically, so that's good, yeah. Plucking out a recommendation a bit more into wild grass here.
That's what I tried. I was like, everyone's going to talk about Saltburn. Everyone's going to talk about Lord of the Rings. Everyone's going to talk about Hamlet or something like that. I wanted to talk about something that maybe your listeners would possibly never have heard of. And I thought it would be fun to do. It's becoming more and more popular. I mean, now Amazon Prime has a Dungeons & Dragons channel where you can watch Dungeons & Dragons games all day long. So this is a world that is becoming more and more popular and getting more and more press and more and more publicity. And I think that they deserve a lot of credit because these are some amazing improvers. They do so much work with improvisation and so much work with staying in character, but only having a tiny little box of a screen to do it in. So
he has to be bursting with imagination there. Yeah.
You really do. And it's so much. And the people who from Queen's Court Games in particular are just they just love what they do and they do a great job at it. Yeah. So,
well, I'm glad that you picked your good word, Joshua. And now I want to thank you so much for coming on here once again. Thank you so much. And you have been a blast to bring on to 2 Cents Critic here. Now you get to promote yourself, promote your socials. Where can people find you online? And where can people find Sidekick Productions?
Absolutely. Well, I am Sidekick Productions, basically. So anywhere you find me, you're going to find Sidekick Productions. So if you are a person who uses Instagram, you can go to @Sidekick Productions. If you are somebody who uses TikTok, it's @Sidekick Productions. If you are using Twitter, it's @Sidekick Prod, P-R-O-D, because Sidekick Productions has too many letters for Twitter. And oh well, I guess. @Blue Sky, it's also Sidekick Productions. Blue Sky, it's josh@sidekickproductions.org. There's so many others now. And of course, YouTube. If you want to watch most of my stuff and you want to watch Skeleton Crew or Demon Doctor, our other horror series, or The Art of Blowing It, or any of our, or catch up on all of the latest updates on Brooklyn Butcher and A Taste of Youth, then you can go to youtube.com/sidekickproductions. And if you kind of want to stick around and see behind the scenes and maybe help us out a little bit, there's always patreon.com/sidekickproductions.
Yeah, Patreon. I'm glad to see people using Patreon. I feel like it's just a very handy way, a helpful way for people to just bring in, just get up extra cash and also share their art, share their creations with people, with people who want to consume it.
It really is. It really is. It's really rewarding to have people who believe in you and want to support you on there. I'm so grateful to the Crooniverse and the people we call the people who support Sidekick Productions the Crooniverse. Yes. So I'm so grateful to the Crooniverse for everything that they do and for also the support that they give to me and Sidekick Productions, because they believe in what we do, and I'm happy that they're there for the ride.
Yes. And as for my socials, you can find this podcast on Twitter and Instagram as 2_SenseCritic. You can follow my personal accounts on Twitter, GoodPods, StoryGraph, Letterboxd, and TikTok at Arthur_Ant18. You can find me on Goodreads at Arthur Howell. If you want to email me, you can reach me at email 2SenseCritic@yahoo.com. You can also check out my blog at 2SenseCritic.com. And make sure you subscribe, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it's on iTunes, Spotify, GoodPods, CastBox, all of those services. And make sure you do the ratings and reviews especially, because they help to spread the show to more listeners, to more of our human ears. And once again, thank you so much, Joshua, for coming on here. This is a fun time. Always great to be able to just talk with creatives like this.
I love it. I'm so grateful to be here, and I'm so glad that we clearly have a lot of enjoyable shows and movies that we enjoy together. So it was a pleasure to talk to you about all these things.
Yeah, same with you. And until next time, stay healthy and stay strong.